Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, it could be. Maybe it's Mitt Romney. You know you love This Week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper in Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
Everybody, it is time for This Week in Mormons. I'm so bad.
What is this?
It's some sort of weird hybrid of blues and Rent. I believe that's what I'm going for.
It's anything that's a hybrid of Rent, I feel like, has earned its place.
It's B.B. King on Broadway.
I've been listening to a lot of B.B. King lately. Ever since he died, his discography has resurfaced in my collection.
That's good. You see, when David Bowie passed away, all of his albums shot up through the charts, like substantially.
Which I still don't understand. I can't listen to a single David Bowie album and feel good about my life.
His the one that he released the Friday before he died on the next Monday it's a very interesting album. It's basically jazz fusion. Interesting record.
And did he live to see it go to number one?
No.
Well,
I mean, he's
all of his
spirit world. We're not going to say whether he's paradise or prison. That's not for me to judge, but he's up there somewhere. I don't know how much stuff from Third Peter's going down, preaching and such. I don't know.
It may have been a quick turnaround.
First Peter.
They were like, hey, you guy, you were almost in space with us before. Welcome back, brother.
He got
up
there
and
he starts
singing Starman
to everyone.
He's like, I'm back.
Anyway,
remember,
that's
Independence
news,
Day is getting a sequel. How great is that?
Hollywood
why,
is so out
is
Will
of Smith ideas. Being? Why is Will Smith not in this sequel? That's the real question here. They got everybody else.
Bigger question: why wasn't Carl Weathers in Creed? What's his problem?
Carl Weathers?
I mean, where was Apollo? Right.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Right.
What's he Apollo doing? That guy's doing Arrested Development cameos.
Well, I was setting you up to spike it, Al, but I guess you don't know that in Rocky IV, Apollo dies, so that's why he wasn't there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know
he can't be in the movies because he died in the fourth one.
I still think he would have been down for a cameo.
Have you never seen Rocky IV? It's the best.
Likely no.
It's the best worst Rocky. It came at the peak of 80s American Soviet madness. It came out in like 86. It was right there.
Wait, was he helping him beat Ivan the Terrible?
Well, it started off that Ivan Drago was going to face off with Apollo in Vegas, and they did the ostentatious Living in America scene where it's just like, in your face, capitalism is better than everything, and Ivan Drago is just going to break you. But then Ivan Drago pummels Apollo until he dies.
What?
Thus sets off the chain of events for the movie with Rocky seeking vengeance.
Oh yeah,
and they have all the great sequences of how how Drago's on.
It's a little bit of a cross of Million Dollar Baby and Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, minus all the weird euthanasia stuff at the end. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
same thing. Anyway,
Million Dollar Baby was a very sad.
It's because you think it's about boxing, and then in the end, it's like, wait a minute, this is
just
about
just a chair in the middle. Spoiler alert: there is a chair in the middle of that ring that you do not see coming.
You're like, this
not
is about
miles.
Mercy killing, basically. That's what this is.
Yeah,
have not seen Clint? That. I'm pretty sure I bought the DVD of Million Dollar Baby back when one bought DVDs, and I've never
the $5 bin. At
I
Walmart.
Think I got the deluxe edition with two discs. And
what do they need a second disc?
Because
what
you want to
be?
See how things were done behind the scenes. This
Uncut
is the problem
scenes,
with the streaming era. Because I can watch I can't watch Lord of the Rings on Netflix. But let's say I could watch Lord of the Rings on Netflix. I can't watch the special features. Netflix doesn't have special features movies. What if I
Jeff,
want?
You have a finite amount of time in your life.
That is
you
true.
Don't have time to watch movies twice.
I
don't
will
have
say,
time to watch.
Yeah, the special features era was more like college, when one does have time to do things like that. So
yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You're watching, like, I legitimately watch news radio with the director's commentary when I was in college because I had an excess of time and I had very slow internet. So
yeah, college is really easy. I don't really want to hear people whine about college being hard because it's not.
Okay. What about? Okay, no, that's fair.
College is a joke. Just school is awesome. It'd be so fun to go back to school.
I've been thinking, what if I didn't go to college and I had four more years of career growth behind me already instead of going to school?
Oh boy, you could be even more intolerable than you are now. I could be
even more intolerable. Oh yeah, what you said, Jeff.
That's all right. Well, what we should do is go back in time. You never went to college. You and I would never have met on a Ukraine trip, and none of this would be happening.
That's true. This show, people, you have college to thank or blame for what you're
listening
to.
You have
right
Howard
now.
Biddulph to thank. Howard Biddulph is the reason for the season, everybody.
Also, Ukraine, which Jeff has a follow-up. The church has no other statement on the Crimea being Russia.
Yeah, we've hit a wall, folks. They haven't played ball. I responded to their initial non-response, and they just said, oh, we appreciate your interest and passion, but that brief statement is the best we can provide. Which is unfortunate because I feel like
bull butter. Yeah. Poppycock, I say. Poppycock.
Exactly. So that door is closed, everybody. Unless if any of you have contacts with somebody in the missionary department or whatever department's in charge of the naming of church units, whatever that might be.
It's so bizarre. So bizarre that, like, because they don't do this normally in the middle of a conflict, just flip the name to something else. They're not like, oh, good.
Well, and that's where the logic doesn't quite hold up. I understand that the units can be named in quirky ways and they can even be districts can be international. Stuff happens. That's because the church is growing in places. But you don't just flip the ownership of an area.
Yeah, the Crimea didn't span multiple countries.
No, it was just part of Ukraine. And if they're not playing politics, then what was the impetus for changing it in the first place? Why not just leave it alone? I don't know. And speaking of, this is a quick one. There's a big map of temples the church put out, all the temples in the world, both under construction, whatever's going on, which I think is cool. I don't want to take away from that. But even on that map, they clearly show Crimea still as part of Ukraine. There is no little line along that southern border right there.
So in this official
temples map,
TF,
it's there. So there's a lot of confusion going on. But the temples map is cool. It shows you dedicated ones, under construction ones that have just been announced. And it's probably the only map you're ever going to see where the insert is of Utah. You know, where the zoomed in thing is not of some grand metropolitan area or a city layout.
It's of Monticello.
It is of Utah. But it is a very... It's a cool thing. I can dig it.
Well, that was a good little find.
It's a good little map.
Jeff, how is your life? How are you?
Well, we survived making winter great again, I believe is the preferred name for the storm that we enjoyed. That's the one that's gone down.
Okay.
I love that that's the one that got popular, a Donald Trump joke. Because, you know, it was called Winter Storm Jonas or whatever, so all the Weezer jokes got out of the way. And then people were calling it Snowzilla or Make Winter Great Again. And Make Winter Great Again stuck, which I think is hilarious. So people were posting photos of just doing my part to make winter great again. So we were holed up for a number of days. It's not like I look forward
did,
to
did going. You, did the, wait, did the supermarkets get cleared out
they
of like
did.
Food?
They did. Of major staples, milk, water, a lot of stuff. It was pretty packed. We did any of our prep shopping the Thursday before, and even then everything was picked over. And there were lines like going from the register area down the aisles to the back of the store.
Those guys had to make a killing on that.
They really did, and thankfully it was fine. Because this wasn't a violent storm, it was just slow and steady with snow, and it piled up. We got about 2 feet at my place, which was a lot, of course. But
thank you for that point of reference.
That's a lot of snow. But it wasn't like a violent storm or anything. We were fine. You know, we had power and water and like all the stuff we needed. Digging out of it was really fun though. They canceled church. And on Sunday I spent about 3+ hours trying to get our cars out from the snow in the parking lot. And
why would you just call AAA?
I don't think AAA comes and does snow removal.
You should have tried.
I should have said, hey, no one can drive anywhere right now. You come here. I really thought about trying to call and like get pizza delivered to see if they were even doing it during the storm, but I didn't go that route. So, yeah, big props to the missionaries in my ward. Happened to see them from my balcony way down below, and I yelled and said, hey. Well, actually, my wife yelled at them, and they came up and helped me do some snow clearing, which was very, very helpful. That cut down on my load by it.
Oh, that is delightful.
60% for about an hour. It was great.
So out of these supermarkets, like all the old crappy food that's been in there forever, like the cans of weird beans that no one ever buys. I'm envisioning all of this is now sitting in someone's home, and they were like, I don't know. There's only four cans left, so I had to take something. I had to.
It might be. Not everything got picked over, but bottled water and stuff like that was the first to go, I would say. I bought some bottled water. We didn't wind up needing it. Now I have bottled water. I can put it in the trunk of my car. Enjoy bottled water when I'm driving around. It's great.
You know what we used to do when there would be an earthquake or something? We'd fill the bathtub with water.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, in this age of showers.
When there was an earthquake. So you're like, guys, there's been an earthquake. Let's fill up the bathtub with water.
Yeah. Yeah.
For what? The aftershocks? Like in case the next earthquake is the one that breaks the pipes?
I don't know.
This doesn't make any sense. You can't
anticipate.
Jeff,
you've got water pressurized in the pipes and you take what you can. It's all just it's a land grab.
But this doesn't make any sense because if you were doing it in anticipation of an earthquake damaging the pipes, you have no way of knowing when the earthquake is going to come. So when would you fill it in advance? Was it mid-earthquake rather than standing in the doorway? You're like, hey, your mom's like, listen, Al, you and Jake go fill up the bathtub while the earth is shaking, and you sung, I feel the earth move
no, whatever, Jeff.
Under
all
my
right.
feet. I feel the sky tumbling down. Tumbling down. So we survived the storm, and now it's just slushy outside, and driving to work sucked. So other than that, though, it was great.
Is it still bad out there?
We got yesterday was better at work because the government was still closed, not as much volume. And it was based all the roads. It was pretty much like being in a canal with 2 or 3 feet of snow on both sides of you. Just one lane kind of plowed out a little
I
bit
feel
better.
Like you got a taste of what like daily life is like in Scandinavia.
Yeah, pretty much. Or in like Nebraska for that matter.
There are countries that live with this and you guys are writing.
Actually, a lot of Scandinavia is moderated by, you know, the Gulf Current and because of its proximity to water. But it still snows there.
It does snow a lot.
Anyway, I'm fine. How are you? The Utah life is yours. I hope you're enjoying it.
I'm good. I went out to LA for the weekend and went to Salvation Mountain. Do you know this place, Jeff?
I don't know Salvation.
This is a guy, Leonard Knight, I believe, who made some folk art mountain full of Jesus loves you. Sort of memorabilia.
Oh, you went, it's way out by the Salton Sea? Wow.
Oh, I went to the Salton Sea. I walked out to it because it looked so pretty, but it's down very low, and it is just a mass of dead fish.
Yeah, the Salton Sea is pretty awesome.
Why is it awesome?
Because it's not a natural body of water. It actually didn't exist until like the 19-teens. When some levees for the Colorado River broke and flooded that, which is below sea level, I think, right there, and flooded that plain and created the sea, and that's why it's there in the first place. So it created an interesting, and now it's important because birds use it during their migration now, so it's very big on them for that. Back in the day, a lot of resorts popped up. I don't know if you saw any of that, like random dilapidated things that used to be on what was the shoreline. And so now it's kind of a cool place to check out where it's sort of this like weird ghost town of what was once a thriving lakey community.
Well, and even better, so we went to, as you get to Salvation Mountain, there's Slab City, which is the, this place is just this, it's an old military barracks that they've like, through some weird conundrum, they gave back to the state, but the state didn't take ownership of, and so it's just this free land that people, there's like a couple, maybe 1,000 people out there at any given time.
Sounds like Christiana in Copenhagen, just no law.
Yeah, so sort of like that, and very hippie-esque, because it's right there by Salvation Mountain. Then as you come back, though, there's this town. I forget the name of the town. We stopped for lunch, but there's one place for lunch. Everything else is boarded up, ghost townish. Very, very
The Imperial County is a very interesting place. It's a very sad place.
We drove through Joshua Tree. Joshua Tree is surprisingly disappointing.
Oh, no. Well, it's not fun to drive through. It's fun to climb. It's great for rock climbing. It's fun.
No, we did. We went and climbed some, but it's pretty much just a desert. There are a few stops where this is great.
In the desert. In the desert.
Then I went to Knott's Berry Farm, which you had been very proud
of. I'm confused. You said you went to L.A., but nowhere you've described is in Los Angeles. I would just like to point that out for our listeners.
If I may, Jeff, all of that was in Los Angeles.
No, you may not.
Traffic perhaps confuses you, but anywhere within 5 hours of the airport is all Los Angeles.
Did you even fly into LAX?
No, I flew into John Wayne.
Yeah.
In L.A.
Oh, my gosh. This show is over. This is
no. So it was great though, man. We had a blast. I ate terrible food. Got sick on French fries and burgers, like any good visit to LA.
Remember when we got those elephant ears at Cedar Point? That giant baked thing just rolled in sugar, and we thought
regretted our decision,
I felt
and then
so gross after that.
Went and rode some 0 to 1,000. Right. Yeah. So it was nice.
That was well good.
Anyway, we got some Mormon stuff.
Yeah, every now and then we do.
I wouldn't say a lot. I would say
I'm looking
some
at the list, and
ones,
I
though.
See at least a dozen plus items. So
now, obviously, the lead this week, the big one, is that there has been a petition at BYU Idaho to ban yoga pants at the gym. There are, this reminds me of back in the day at BYU. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a petition to ban the single strap side bags because women would wear them where the strap went between the bosoms and it would accentuate
and
their
breasts.
And
all it made me think about was boobs. That's all you can
do. And the men said, how dare you wear your bags like that? Wear it with the two strap where it's like suspenders and pulls the clothing tight on either side and not this weird multiple uniboob sort of situation that we have. So here we have other poor misguided men, I'm assuming. There's no women that are voting against yoga pants. And in fact, there should be no men voting against yoga pants. Yoga pants is God's gift to good, modest people everywhere that still want to be a little bit show-offy. And surprisingly flattering. So
do we really apply this to all yoga pants? What about Juicy Couture? Does that brand apply? Because I feel like when you got
the
Juicy
petition,
emblazoned upon
the petition
your
says, we respectfully petition that the use of spandex, skin-tight yoga pants, compression pants, or other uncovered skin-tight apparel does not conform to the standards of modesty. Blah, blah, blah. No, sir.
It serves a purpose. I believe it's easier to work out in good workout pants.
There's a lovely op-ed here by Haley Romney. Thank you, the Romneys, finally coming to save the day again. She says, hey, whoa, we're working out. This is the same as swimming or running track or doing any of these things of that nature. We are here to work out.
Ah,
and we have
look
to
at
dress
it, look at it this way, though. You want to talk about swimming, then there's the whole discussion about modesty for swimwear and what is appropriate. So it's not just the activity itself denotes a specific level
of
something.
Is
it's figuring out what is appropriate for the activity.
What do you mean? Go on, Jeff.
Like they're discussing, and I think misguidedly, but discussing what appropriate attire for the gym. Should it be baggier? Should it be tighter? You could take that over to the world of swimwear for women in particular. What's appropriate? A one-piece? A tankini? Are bikinis naughty? Are they inappropriate? Are bikinis analogous to yoga pants in this situation? So it's finding what is the appropriate attire for any activity, basically.
Well, what is the alternative? Because the alternative would be maybe some very short shorts. That seems common because you want things that aren't going to bind and grab.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, well, one, absolutely, who cares? And you women, if you want to wear some yoga pants to go and work out, God bless you. You got our vote. We're there to support you, and we're gonna try our best to only look appropriately. And if we aren't, that's our own dang fault. That's not yours. So you don't even worry about it. You wear what you wear. These guys, see, this is a problem that I have. There's these BYU Idaho gentlemen. They just give
Here's a good comment, though. Clearly, if BYU-Idaho students have enough time to draft and circulate the petition I just read, then they have too soft a curriculum.
Here, here.
Boom. Here. Maybe if you actually, you know, work the minds of the people.
Well, what is going through their head of, like, all the things that I want to make my issue? I'm choosing yoga pants?
I want in some ways to be able to relate to that mentality. Because for me, I appreciate modesty in women. I always have. But, like, I don't see women in workout clothes where I'm just like, oh, boy, this is an issue. I never felt that way. I want to really understand that mindset.
No,
I do
not. Don't even try to understand it. Absolutely
I don't
not.
Want to change who I am.
Just chalk it up to BYU, Idaho, this frigid place where they're not allowed to wear shorts nor sandals, and say, you obviously are not our point of reference for modesty, young man. I said good day, sir. I said good day.
All right. So you know how we've had this push for a while about the Sabbath?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Right. It's been going down. And I think it's a good thing. Now, I believe, of course, a lot of this kind of goes without saying, but there's an article at LDS.org, because LDS.org does blogging sort of now. This is from last month, but it talks about the emphasis on Sabbath observance and really why they care about this so much. And it's not just so that we keep the rules better and learn to be an obedient people and therefore are closer to the Spirit. They say specifically it is because we live in an age of doubt and fear. And by working to make the Sabbath a delight, as they say, we will increase our faith in Heavenly Father.
The emphasis is about increasing faith.
And in His Son, yeah. Jesus Christ. But specifically because we're living in an age of doubt and fear, which I thought was very interesting, because the church is acknowledging that there is attrition. There are people who have questions, and there's nothing wrong with questions, but those who are perhaps not finding the answers they want to find. Those who are struggling with the answers they do find, whatever it may be, but there are many people who your faith gets weakened because of X, Y, and Z. And the church recognizes this, and they're challenging us and saying, here's the Sabbath day. Work harder at it and see if your relationship with God doesn't improve.
It's interesting because as you're, you can sort of judge your appetite for the Sabbath day or judge your faith based on your appetite for the Sabbath day. Because when you are hungry for more interactions with the Holy Ghost, I think Sunday becomes this great reprieve where you can just study and bask in doctrinal knowledge and faith-promoting stories in the Scriptures, you know, and you sort of get into it. You've waited all week to have the excuse or the opportunity to spend this time in there. And then when you're just sort of taking it as an excuse to get a nap in and watch a little extra TV,
mm-hmm.
Your faith is going to follow suit. And so, you know, a renewed focus on the Sabbath day, I think is actually a really good place sort of a way of calling out the fact that our faith has become more and more lackadaisical, but at the same time, you know, letting us sort of look at the right thermometer, so to speak, and see how we're doing.
Yeah.
Because if we're all honestly, I mean, if we all sort of evaluated our Sabbath day worship, I think most of us would be like, ah, yeah, no, you know. It's not as great as I wish it was.
I could do more. Like, I could have done more this past Sunday. We had no church. I do feel like I got my worship. I spent more time shoveling on my car than I would at a Sunday block. That's weird to think about. But that was my worship.
Do you have really weak forearms? Are you not good with a shovel?
Have you not seen me? I mean, look at this. Look, there's nothing here.
Oh, boy.
There's nothing here. This is.
Yeah, you need to hire people.
I look like Captain America before the serum. That's what's going on.
That's fair. Let's see. So Ammon Bundy, we reported on this a while ago.
Yeah.
The Bundy clan that had taken over that place in Oregon, the federal building, as they so...
It was, yeah, the building for the wildlife refuge.
Bird sanctuary, either one. So that all ended this week. Right, there was a.
I don't know if we're gonna say it all ended, but like,
are there still people there?
I think there's still some who are there. Yeah, but
because seven people left in a van. I'm assuming they were, you know, they couldn't take the boredom and went for bowling or something.
No, but they left and they then opened the cops up a Popeyes
pulled them over.
Opened up.
Popeye, they knew a Popeye's chicken. Sonic was open for breakfast, so they had to go.
Like, guys, it's Sonic Drink Tuesday. We got to get in there. This is happening.
But they left, got pulled over on a routine traffic stop. No reason. It was them. It was just the taillight was out after the officer hit it with a flashlight. And then they were all taken to jail. And one man, LaVoy Finicum, was killed.
Reportedly. They've been, the authorities have been pretty quiet about whatever happened with all of this. But yeah, reportedly LaVoy Finicum, who's been sort of a spokesman for this whole thing, was killed during the traffic stop.
This is actually really, I mean, not from a from a religious standpoint, Ammon Bundy is Mormon, and he was arrested. That's why we're talking
Mormons
about it here.
Mormons doing stupid things.
From another standpoint, this is, you know, this is kind of interesting to watch. I mean, the Black Lives Matter group that, like, I don't know where any anger or frustration over this incident or this guy getting killed in a routine traffic stop, which maybe there's no reason to ever be angry about this. But in the event that there is, I see a lot of people, because in the Mormon community, there are a lot of people that support this Bundy renegade.
Have you seen
activity.
I don't feel like I've seen many who have been supportive of what the Bundy's
I
been.
Have
you?
I have several. Yeah, there's people that are like, pray for our heroes. Pray for them.
I've seen some, not from a Mormon perspective, but I've seen a lot of people randomly say, like, yeah, of course this is happening in, like, Obama's America, that kind of stuff. But yeah. I know that I've seen, like, Mormons connecting it as Mormons supporting
I don't
Mormons.
Understand. Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I have, actually. There's a,
okay,
there's
yeah,
a lot
I have
out there.
So it's, okay.
It's a challenge in today's day and age to understand where it's appropriate to direct your rage or frustration, because everybody, you know, having somebody be killed by a police officer is it's frustrating no matter what. Perhaps it was all in, you know, the right way of handling the situation, but the
liberal media doesn't care because it was a conservative white guy who got shot.
Well, I don't know if that's true.
I'm just saying stuff. Though I really wonder what the details are there, because it's not just didn't seem like it was a routine traffic stop. All things seem to have pointed to there being some kind of an altercation. I mean, I imagine somebody was probably pulling out a gun. This is all conjecture, but pulling out a gun on a police officer, because why else would the police officer randomly be shooting down one of the guys? Not for kicks and giggles. I mean, there had to be some kind of an altercation, I would assume.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. And the personality of these gentlemen speak to them having weapons with them of some sort, which would escalate the conflict.
Ammon Bundy has the WMDs. That's where they were hiding.
That's what I heard. So in lighter news, though, President Ukdorf has a great picture on his Facebook page of him with the candy bomber and Han Solo. I just feel like squad goals times 1,000. These are the people you need to be running.
Only
with.
One of those men has actually crashed a plane.
Which one?
Han Solo.
Really? Candy Bomber never crashed?
I'm going to assume Candy Bomber never crashed, because how else would he be allowed to do all that candy bombing?
Harrison Ford is an actual pilot, though, right?
He is. That's what I'm saying. Harrison Ford crashed his plane recently. I think it was when he was filming the last movie. No. No, he broke his ankle or something when filming the movie doing something else. Point is, Harrison Ford did once crash his plane in the greater Los Angeles area. He plowed it like into a park somewhere and survived, obviously, and he did fine. But
I love the top comment on this. I always knew Ukdorf was a Jedi. It's true. It's just true.
It's perfect that it's President Ukdorf, because he's a pilot, but if this were any other apostle, it would not be as gratifying. I mean, let's be honest. If Elder Stevenson,
of course,
were there,
we went to Quentin L. Cook. Of course, it's Quentin.
I specifically did not say Quentin L. Cook. You would find Elder Cook at some sort of a healthcare convention. That's where he would be.
What the problem with gluten is? Is that it's everywhere, guys.
I want Elder Cook to give a talk on why the fad to not eat gluten is baseless. There's no science to support it unless you actually have a gluten allergy.
I would listen to that.
There are no benefits to not eating gluten if one does not have an allergy. Eat the gluten, folks. Eat it.
It's a not eating carbs thing is what it turns into.
Well, sure, but that's a different thing. You can have gluten without even... They're not.
That's fair. That's
there's
fair.
A lot of overlap. If there were a Venn diagram of gluten and carbs, yes, lots of overlap. Lots of it, but not all of it.
I like that visual aid you're giving me.
You like how I took the two circles with my hands?
Yeah, and then a Venn diagram is where they...
This is like an eclipse. Look at this. Right here, the moon and the sun, the stars.
Okay.
The chimney sweeps.
I feel like you're stalling, Jeff. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
She's like, nope, I'm good. That was a show. Sorry, I was just writing something down. I apologize. I want to talk about Ted Cruz and tithing.
Now, I heard about this.
Now, this is interesting for a number of reasons. Also, McKay Coppins wrote it. So, hello, McKay.
Our captain.
By the way, McKay, you published this on January 21st at 1:38 in the morning. Buddy, no good writing happens at that time of day. You've got to table it till the next day, sleep on it. You can't hit the publish button.
If McKay Coppins comes into our office ever, Jeff, can we both agree that we will stand on the desk and recite the O Captain, My Captain speech from Dead Poets Society?
Okay, I'll do it. It'll be great if we're on Skype with him, because then he'll just see our ankles or our feet or something. not have a clue what's going on.
No, that's fair.
That'll be good. So apparently, of course, Ted Cruz running for president. Ted Cruz is not Mormon, but Ted Cruz has a strong evangelical following, often invokes his religion when discussing his beliefs and the things he wants to do with America. That's fine. But he's cited the importance of tithing, as a number of Christians have. Just like Ben Carson, of course.
How does that come up in casual conversation?
I don't know. You know, you're just sitting around, you're talking about the new Popeyes that opened up in Oregon, and you're like, hey, if I weren't paying tithing, I could have enough money to buy the Popeyes. It's fair. Like that. It's fair. Okay. So I guess what came out last week in some interviews, or also his records, people, of course, look through their finances once you are running for public office. And Mr. Cruz has only donated 1% or less of his income to charity between 2006 and 2010, a far cry from the 10% that most tithing believers believe to be requisite to pay a tithe. So evangelicals now are kind of like, what's this all about? You're saying you're one of us. You're saying you believe in charity, but you're not giving up any of your money. And Mike Huckabee, of course, has jumped on this. Mike Huckabee is running for president, lest any of you forget.
Wait, is he for real?
Yeah, he has been, but he's not a force this time around like he was back in 2008.
Back when he's the Romney killer?
Well, in 2008, Huckabee won Iowa, for example. So, but he's not going to win it this time around at all. Now, for perspective, though, obviously not everyone does this. Obama, back when he was a professor, donated 1% of his income when he's at the University of Chicago. Jeb Bush donated 2%. So it's not like Donald Trump is...
No, this is a thing because he's touting it as a bastion of his qualifications.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting to me, though, is that, so it's one thing you can jump on that and be like, well, is there a little hypocrisy here? But also, do we have a place to care? Should we care about this? Are his charitable contributions his personal business? So
is it not a matter of hypocrisy? Or as Huckabee says, it's a matter of authenticity. I still have a quote in the Boston Globe saying Mike Huckabee is the biggest blunder in American politics, which I just feel like we should remember always.
You think he is the one? Mike Huckabee is the biggest blunder?
This was in 2008. I tweeted this, so I feel like it was accurate.
I found some tweet once from years ago. It said something like, I hate middle America. This was like in 2006.
Oh, you got to delete that, Jeff. You'll never make it to president.
I know, right? I can't wait until our generation has to run for like serious office. It's going to be so fun. The social media generation. It's going to be
Ben Carson taking the high road. Since tithing is a personal commitment between oneself and God, I wouldn't begin to speculate on someone else's faith or devotion. I would just speculate on their ability to understand that a tithe is a tenth. Maybe he doesn't know.
In Spanish, it's literally called tenthing, basically. So you can't get around it. There.
Because they have that weird lisp, that sort of sibilant S.
That's true, because they call it diezmo in Spain. Diezmo. With a Z.
And now they've got it. I mean, people are running dirty ads against Cruz. My only beef with Cruz is that he wears too much foundation and lipstick. I mean, I haven't looked at his politics. I have only seen that the man has bright red lips and a very flat complexion.
Maybe he is going through something, okay? Maybe he is trying to hide some blemishes.
Well, hey, I would rather vote for a man with ferocious acne than a man that looked like Ted Cruz.
I don't think a man with ferocious acne can get elected president. We're too superficial. I mean, you got Chris Christie's got some old acne scars, you can tell, but that's about all we get.
Well, Chris Christie's a large man. Mike Huckabee, have you seen his family? That first lady, woo, mama. Anyway,
she has not been going easy on the funeral potatoes, is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, when you're on the campaign trail, you're not eating it's a lot of Jason's Deli, likely.
Dude, I would love it. There's only one Jason's Deli in the whole D.C. metro area.
Probably a lot of Jimmy John's sandwiches. Not that good. Fast going
not
on.
A good choice. Quiznos is better than Jimmy John's.
All right, I don't agree with that.
But, well, Potbelly is better than all of them. That is true. I tell the
truth. All right, so.
But let me ask y'all, should we care? Should we only care because he makes it an issue, so therefore it's fair game?
Yes, that's exactly it. If I were running for president and I had never paid tithing, and I belonged to a church that demanded it, and I never bothered to bring it up, I never looked at my opponents and said, oh, well, you guys don't pay tithing like I do. You have no place to bring it up. As soon as I bring it in, it's like as soon as Hillary starts having Bill campaign for her, woof, open that floodgate. You know what I'm saying?
Well, fair enough. Okay. Good deal. So
the gloves come off. Donald Trump's hair goes back in a man bun, and he goes after it.
I wonder how Mormons feel about Ted Cruz. In general, I'd love to get a better beat on that. With Mitt Romney, it was so easy. Like, we knew where most people's allegiances were, but I don't get a good vibe on Trump. I don't think a lot of people care about Cruz.
At this point, I feel like everybody's just holding out. Really, like, I mean,
are we all going to do the right thing and vote for John Kasich?
I am anxiously awaiting the moment when Mitt Romney just says, "I'm back."
Did you see that Bloomberg is considering running?
I did, which is also sort of exciting.
I really want this to go to a convention. Let's mix it up, folks.
It'd be amazing. That'd be so great.
Well, okay then.
We'll make it out.
It's going to be
all right. Let's see. We got a Peter Breinholt. Now, a lot of you know that I think Peter Breinholt is this generation's Michael McLean, meaning the greatest of Mormon musicians. I've been to Peter Breinholt concerts, multiple concerts.
I did not even know he existed until my mission. Because EFYCDs...
No one knew he existed until
EFYCDs
my mission.
EFYCDs were not a thing on my radar until I was a missionary. Didn't even know they were a thing.
No, and then you get out there and you're like, you're hearing the, what do we have? A Call I Hear? What about?
You hear his music and you ask yourself,
about? And what about is such an easy one to learn in a new language. You know, it's what about and what about. I mean, that's the first day in the MTC, you're singing along with him in whatever tongue you're learning. It was just a delight. So anyway, Peter Breinholt he wants people to be aware that there are 2 million children in sex slavery right now. So he did a song with a one voice children's choir, which isn't a new song. This is disappointing. I thought it would be new. It's not.
Yes, that's the disappointing thing in all of this.
We don't come around here no more. But he does it with Children's Choir, 99 cents. Proceeds go to the Children in Sex Slavery.
The Operation Underground Railroad, which was founded by Mormon and ex-CIA agent Tim Ballard to dismantle child trafficking organizations around the world.
We've actually seen a lot of people supporting our Operation Underground Railroad.
Think about how insane that is, that there are 2 million kids in sex slavery, children being sold into sex slavery.
I honestly, like, my head can't comprehend.
Like we get so wrapped up in culture wars and stuff that are important in the church. I'm not, it's fine. We got things going on, but I wish we would hear more about stuff like this from the pulpit and be like, folks, like, this is a moral cause that we need to stop, or, you know, that we need to fix. Like, this is, it's galling. And I know we have a lot of things to be concerned about, and all of us individually, collectively, but maybe someday the church will take a more proactive role in things like this even. I'm sure they do stuff behind the scenes we don't hear about, even with causes like this, but...
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking they have taken the time to release a statement on the Bundy situation.
Yeah. That was basically to distance ourselves from the Bundys.
I know.
That was all that was. It was like, this is not us. Do not equate them with us, please. So I'm calling it, I'm hoping Elder Renlund, because I have good faith in him, is going to talk about this issue.
Well, and I hope he does.
His
and
email then, address is probably, what would it be? RenlundD or something at, no, it'd be, I forgot Elder Renlund's first name. D. Dallin, Dilvin?
I got to buy the 99 cents. I'd give a dollar. And of that, Apple's taking their cut of 25%, 30% maybe because it's a digital good. I don't know. The iTunes world as well.
Yeah, you could just give them the money directly too.
No. I kind of want to give them 70 cents in the end.
Okay.
I hope that's not weird.
No. But folks, maybe get in there. Make it happen. Help raise money. Stop the bad things.
And it's Peter Breinholt. The man's a legend.
This makes me feel like we could do something really like proactive and positive with our own platform. But I don't know what it would be.
I can't tell
what
it needs to look like.
I'm an idiot. There's things I don't know. I'm going to do some quick mentions here. I loved this little story in LDS Living this month. All about the church in Iceland, which I geek out about anything that's remotely rooted in social studies, anthropology or whatever. But this provides us with a brief history of the saints in Iceland and then sort of the church in Iceland today, what's going on now. The great background here is I think a lot of people don't realize the church had a bit of a robust presence in Iceland back in the day, but like most European countries, or as in most European countries, the saints left and went to Utah to strengthen the saints there. So today we don't have a lot of members in Iceland. But if you go, a lot of Utahns today are of Icelandic descent. When the Icelandic folks arrived in Utah, now what I've read, this article doesn't say it, but I've read that because I believe back then Iceland was governed by Denmark, Brigham Young just assumed they were all Danes and sent them down to Spanish Fork to settle what is now Spanish Fork.
That is offensive.
With their fellow Danes. Now, while there are, of course, they're related, of course, Icelandic is very much its own language and stuff like that. But a lot of Icelandic folks settled Spanish Fork, and a lot of people in Utah are of Icelandic heritage, which is pretty cool. Today, on the other hand, though, there are two branches in Iceland. I got to go to church in one of them once. There's one branch in Reykjavik and one in Selfoss. I'm saying that poorly, but...
Soho. Yeah, no, Soho.
In Soho. It's... just a cool thing to read, the picture of the meeting house they show, the yellow one. I've been to church there. The branch there was very delightful, very friendly, nice folks. It's a small branch of like 40 people.
Why so small, Jeff?
I don't know. Well, Iceland to begin
with.
You
know why? It's because everybody moved to Utah. That's
why.
Well,
yeah. That's what happened.
If they would have stayed there, think of the bastions of strength Iceland could have been.
Wouldn't it have been funny if everyone else would have done the gathering, but we've just said, no, Icelandic people, you stay put. Build it there in Iceland. All the rest of you.
Like, it's okay. All right.
And then today, Iceland, which has a whole country population of like 400,000
people. Empty sea in Reykjavik.
The Reykjavik Temple. It'd be awesome.
That would have been nice. See, this is what I've been talking about this whole time. Immigration is actually, you know, did we need everybody in the beginning? Sure, it was kind of nice because now we have a very densely populated Mormon world. But now, this leads me to my next point, Miss Utah Model International. I'm not sure about the title. There apparently is a Miss Utah Model International crown.
I investigated and found out what's going on with the title.
What is it?
So she's Miss Utah Model, but Miss International is a thing. It's basically like a Latino-focused pageant, is my understanding. And so Miss Utah is the Utah one.
But okay, so anyway, Wilmera, this woman down in Sao Paulo, she got the call to immigrate from her missionary that baptized her and then wooed her to marriage. You, sir, Brother Pierce, lock your heart, as they say. You went and found the Sao Paulo model and brought her. Where are they living? Are they establishing the roots of the church in some country or land that sorely needs their faith and support, Jeff?
Nope. They are finding a way to provide more human capital to work at Tucano's, Rodizio, the various Brazilian establishments that exist in Utah that would exist nowhere else.
Oh, so they're in Provo, Utah. Absolutely they are.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you for immigrating again. See, Iceland, Sao Paulo, it's the same problem.
On the side, she walks up to you with a skewer and has chicken hearts. She
that, well, that's racist. I feel like that actually went a little too far. Jeff, his views do not speak for the show or the other members of the show.
That might be the first time you've had to issue a disclaimer for me, and I'm glad that's what took it there. That was a huge moment for me.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. I've done it
so,
for you.
So, Miss Utah Model Home International, what are her duties?
I don't think it's Model Home. I don't think she's Miss Utah Model Home.
Wait a minute. I was under the impression that if I went and viewed the Talladega, whatever the new
Jeff, what do
was,
I always say is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family.
Okay.
Family. But you always said breakfast. No, so Miss Utah Model Inter. So I've actually seen these where they've been like Miss Utah Africa and things. There may be...
There's Miss Everything.
It's yeah, so there's funny. A lot of people that just want a crown. They want to be told that they're pretty. And maybe this is actually more of a function of a breakdown in the home. The husband needs to be... Hey, Brother Pierce.
He needs to read that McKay quote.
And you need to, I mean, the missionary work has not stopped. You got to continue to build the members of your own family now.
Speaking of really dumb things like this in the church, there's nothing new going on with this, but our old friends, the Mormon Bachelor, I just found this last week. I honestly don't remember how it happened.
They're rebranding
again because it was the Mormon Bachelor, the Mormon Bachelorette, and then it was like the LDS Bachelor because the church is getting all weird about things having the word Mormon in it. But now it's called the Modest Bachelor, which that doesn't even make
sense.
So
these are finally men that are wearing not yoga pants and not single strap.
No,
backpacks.
Lots of bagginess. Basically a High Sierra only wardrobe is...
This is fashion of the 90s, we should call it.
So, I don't know anything else beyond that. It appears that nothing else has changed because their header image still says the Mormon Bachelor. Their profile image says the Mormon Bachelorette. And then the name of the Facebook page is the Modest Bachelor. So, I really don't know what to
believe. This is a sinking ship, Jeff. This is a sinking ship that we need to get away from.
This is the Titanic and the Bismarck and the Lusitania all wrapped together.
That sounds terrifying.
And the Poseidon, for that matter.
That was a terrible movie also.
Did you see the original or you mean the remake?
The 2000s remake.
Have you seen the original? That's much better.
As a quick aside, there is a TV show. I'm not sure if this has to be some Mormon folk. Is this right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about these people?
These are Mormon folk.
They've made a TV series called Adam and Eve. And they've given themselves... their own awards, many of their own awards. And it's called Adam and Eve, and the premise is Adam and Eve, but they don't like each other. And hilarity ensues. A romantic comedy TV series of 8-minute episodes on Vimeo. I mention it only because I was actually, you know, it's one of those where you watch knowing that people thought that it came out really well, and it's just sort of entertaining to see their efforts manifested in reality. So go give it a watch if you need to kill.
I thought it was
awfully
minutes. Okay. Yeah.
See, yeah. Jeff's standards for movies. I would never trust a review from Jeff about any movie, primarily what? Stemming from what was the one movie that we had a severe disagreement on? Oh, Jurassic World. If you. Jeff has to fit in with his Rotten Tomatoes critics because he loved it until he didn't when he found out that everybody else didn't love it.
No,
he is swayed by the wind.
I am
doctrine.
Not. I never loved Jurassic World.
And also,
I was entertained, but I was like really bothered.
The second greatest movie of all time, Gone in 60 Seconds, you didn't love either.
I've never written a review of Gone
with in 60 with seconds. The man who's almost a Hercules status, half mortal, half god, Nicolas Cage. Who stars in that film? How do you not love that show?
I don't know. I didn't know that I did not love Gone in 60 Seconds. I'm very sorry. I wrote a review of Freetown, if you remember that. I wrote it.
You were very supportive of Freetown, and that movie sucked.
I was not. I was supportive of the idea behind the movie, but I was still trying to
No, that was a poorly done movie. It was not a great film.
I think it was an okay done movie. It showed promise.
You let the fact that they came on our show influence your review.
No, it was an okay.
And that, dear Jeff, is shameful.
I am starstruck. I only want to be a critic so I can canoodle with the stars.
That's fair. That's fair.
All I care about. All right, another couple quick ones here. We mentioned a while ago there was a group that's submitting complaints about BYU's policy in that if you go to BYU and then leave the church, you can get kicked out of BYU and lose your ecclesiastical endorsement. Even though if you were to be from another faith and become Mormon, you're fine. But there's no leeway if you stop being Mormon at BYU. So that's its own issue. But apparently, the American Bar Association is looking into the discrimination claim at BYU Law School. This doesn't really mean like a ton has happened. Annie Knox of the Salt Lake Tribune. This did not need to be a 400 word article. This is a 200 word article. But
yeah, no, but,
there's nothing official happening, but the ABA is looking into the complaint. And so
I believe that if somebody has left the religion but still living by the honor code, which is hard to police when you don't have an ecclesiastical leader that is reviewing the principles of the honor code with this person. I think we need to fight for more separation of church and school, personally.
Well, we know that you believe church school should be done away with entirely.
Absolutely. So there's an article here called on LDS.org. In this month's Ensign by Robin Zenger Baker, called "When a Child Leaves the Church," which I think is actually a positive discussion to be having. I had a great experience, or not a great experience, but I was chatting with some relatives of mine that were hanging out with me last week, and you know, one of them has decided that the church isn't really the route he wants to go. And we had to go through some of the some of the dialogue of like, well, what does that mean, and then how he should act with around me, because he's trying to establish an identity. But still, and so we had the whole like, hey man, when I go visit a Muslim friend or a Baptist friend or a Methodist friend, I can still go to their church and be with them and like observe their practices and let it sort of strengthen my own faith or meditation or beliefs, and you're not giving up an identity by sort of participating in a culture or a religion. And it ended up being a really good conversation. And I feel like there's a fear in the church as a whole when a lot of this has some legs, where if somebody leaves the church, you've cut off this huge social tie back into your family, back into your community. And so understanding how to, I feel like there's not a very positive way for people to leave the church but still have the opportunity to live like a good, moral, positive life and be accepted in these communities still.
Well, and then building on that, I like this article a lot. I think it's pretty positive overall, because how do parents deal with that? And I like that we can talk about both ends. How does the individual cope with everything you discussed? Then how do parents deal with that? And I think that is a hard thing for parents to figure out. Like, hey, I've raised my kids to hopefully believe in this and live a certain way. And if they reject it, or they're not going to live it, that's not what they want to do.
Is it Elder Christofferson who has the gay brother?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's him.
There was an article that was about his family, where I think the mom's, as soon as he came out, the mom was like, listen, our family is about love. And we are family first and everything else second. So we will love each other and we'll support each other in whatever we do. And that's how it's going to be. And I feel like as a parent, if that could be your response to, a wayward child, because really, I mean, there's so many stories of like at different times in your life, you're looking for different things. And as a 17-year-old, maybe you're not looking for God or religion. And it gets in the way more than it helps. And then as you sort of mature and grow, you start, without a doubt, you end up looking for some semblance of spirituality in your life or some sort of understanding of your place in all of this. And that's when religion really matters, is in those moments. And if your kid goes away, like, be a positive support for him and help him find him his what he's looking for, with the expectation that at some point he likely will start to ask these big soul-searching questions and start to look for answers. And if he feels too embattled in his position to ever look in the church again, you've actually done more harm than good.
Amen. It's a good article. Everyone should go read it.
Good.
Maybe I will link to it, maybe.
Oh, Jeff, you should.
I'll do it. So I've got one last one, a little bit more of a sort of a downer. So Jana Reese, who I've generally found to be amusing, but I've been more frustrated with her writing for the past little bit. This is an article called Three Reasons Mormons Don't Corner the Market on Truth. Now, to start off with, I don't think we corner the market on truth. I think even our official church doctrine says we believe many faith traditions have truths, but we believe that only here in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the fullness of the restored gospel available on all according saving ordinances, priesthood power, etc., is where all of that is found. Don't believe me? Read conference talks. Read the Doctrine and Covenants. It's all very clearly there, which doesn't mean we want to take away from the truths other faith traditions teach, but we want to build upon that and say that the fullness is here. But Jana seems to disagree for some reason, and her claims are, for a PhD, I think these are weak arguments. She talks about one of her favorite Book of Mormon passages, 2 Nephi 29, where it says, you know ye not that there are more nations than one? That I, the Lord God, have created all men, and that I remember those who are upon the isles of the sea, and that I rule them all? So, she says, a core tenet of Mormon theology is that God didn't just speak to the Israelites in Jerusalem, but also the people in the New World. Therefore, it's clear that other people will receive beautiful religious truth. Yes, but that doesn't mean they're going to receive different truth. And that's what drives that argument alone, I think, is silly. I mean, I don't even get it. Yeah. Am I missing something here? Because I feel like there might be other sheep, but the other sheep are not going to be taught that baptizing infants is cool and you do it by sprinkling. Like, that's not...
Well, this is interesting because when you look back in the Bible times, right? When Jeremiah was a prophet, Lehi was also a prophet.
Yes, sir.
And so this is, you know, this is something that isn't a new concept that the Lord would have multiple. In fact, we have 15 prophets, as some might say, but different continents don't have different prophets anymore. And
yeah, we don't have a different gospel that's going to be taught to different people. They might get different components, perhaps, at times. I mean, like, you could argue the Book of Mormon has more clarity. The Nephites might have had a little bit more clarity than the Israelites.
Well, and that could be strictly a function of just translation, right?
Sure.
I think that the point you're making, Jeff, is well placed. It's not. I mean, we're not trying to corner market on truth. We know that every religion has truth in it. And in fact, I feel like different churches even help people along through different points in their life. You know, where maybe there is a time for lady out there in Salt Lake City to be a member of a Baptist church, because that's a community that's going to help her along at that sure. point in her life. But as your spiritual progression goes, and I think I've mentioned this before, but there's that great verse in Jeremiah 50 where it talks about how the children of Israel will go seeking a perpetual or everlasting covenant with God. And this is a desire that just comes out of them. They will go to with their faces thitherward, seeking to make these covenants. And as we develop, as our religious aptitude develops, we start to desire to have these covenants, these eternal covenants, everlasting covenants in our life. And that's when the church comes into play. And it's not about, 200 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, the people were still being drawn to Christ, right? They were still being drawn to Him, and having a restored church on the earth today in no way diminishes that, I don't feel like.
And we don't have to go, there's only two other points, we don't have to hit on them as long, but you kind of alluded to the third one, which is actually concepts of the afterlife, in that we believe people can still receive the gospel and receive truth, of course, in the afterlife. Like, you know, the Baptist woman in this life could still presumably accept the gospel later on, but I still don't think that takes away from the concept that we have the fullness of the gospel. Likewise, her second point, the restoration is a work in progress. Well, it is. It's not a singular event. The truth has been restored. We still have stuff revealed to us. That's an important thing that we believe, but that doesn't mean that, like, we don't have the fullness of the truth right now as it has yet been revealed to mankind. I just think this is a weird piece. I don't know. It's very strange. I think what you said, Al, most of your comments were really far superior. I feel like you should be the lawyer. I mean, you know.
You should be the lawyer.
So it's a strange piece from Jana, but give it a read, folks. Maybe I'm off base. Maybe I'm missing a valuable point here. I'm not sure. And if I am, that's fine. Tell us about it on the Facebook post with this, or you know, email us, contact at thisweekinmormons.com. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'd love to get your insights on it.
Speaking of which, you can also find us on social media, Jeff. This Week in Mormons is on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We're on Instagram.
A little bit.
The YouTubes. Oh, that's pretty much the main ones. Maybe Vimeo. We might be on Vimeo. I don't know.
Well, we are starting our own web series.
Good, yeah. It's called
Adam and Steve. You've heard that one before, folks.
Let's make it Alan and Steve, and it'll just be a rom-com of me and my roommate. It's an idea.
I'm okay with it. I'll produce it.
All right. Hey, everybody. You have a great week. Thank you for joining us, as per usual, here on This Week in Mormons.
Very much appreciate it. Al, go well, my son. Be well.
All right. See you,
Jeff.
All right,
folks. Hey, thanks, everybody. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye.